Okay, so let me just begin by introducing the topic. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a lot of us are in the middle of learning Pirkei Avos right now. And, we read at the end of every single parak, Rav Chanani ben Akasha Omer Ratz HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Zakos Es Yisrael L'Fikach Hirba Lehem Torah Mitzvos. The beauty of receiving Tarag Mitzvos, besides obviously receiving all the mitzvos and having a lot of actions we can do to display our commitment to the Ribono Shel Olam, and connect to Him. Part of it is also that there is like a integrity to the Taryag mitzvos, where each things are linked. You can't have a single more or a single bit less, and This is something we touched upon as we were discussing the first topics of Mumar, the Te'avan and Mumar Lahachis. The Moni HaMitzvos themselves, had spent so much time and waged so many wars, friendly wars, over which would be counted and which wouldn't. Not to say that the things not counted aren't important, but there's a hierarchy and an interrelationship to mitzvos, and each one kind of represents something different and special to the entire body. Ramach Evarim Vishas Agidin. And we spoke a lot about this in Mumar L'Te'avon and Mumar L'Hachis, but as an introduction to this year, Rav Rosenzweig spent a lot of time, because we had already spoken so much of Mumar and the rebelliousness of a Mumar and what that means to him on a Gavra level, he spent a lot of time here using the opportunity, and we'll see, even from the Shach of Itaria, he took this as an opportunity to speak about the interrelationship to mitzvos, Avodah Zarah and Shabbos being chief among them. So as we consider, as we step into the shir, the topic, what we need to think about mainly is two questions. The big question obviously is, and we're going to focus on particular, very significant, foundational mitzvos, HaTorah, is how exactly, what role does each and every mitzvah play to the entire body of Torah mitzvos? And now I'm including all of them, not only the 613 in the Minyan HaMitzvos, but all the mitzvahs min HaTorah, the derabanans, etc., and the subcategories, the chalakim, etc. And we also need to figure out, vis-a-vis particular institutions, and this is a little bit abstract, I apologize, but vis-a-vis particular institutions, do certain of those mitzvahs' role play an even greater one in some situations than in others? What exactly, ultimately, is the basis for treating a certain avarian, a particular way? And that obviously will become very clear, which is why I don't feel bad being so ambiguous. But we're always going to be assessing the different levels. Let's just take Avodah Zarah so that it's more specific. The different levels, the different kinds of Avodah Zarah infractions, not only the classic violation of Avodah Zarah, of really worshiping a foreign god, but even things within it, of which there are many. And the object is to think about what each violation in its core represents problematically. What's so bad about doing it? Is every kind of act of Avodah Zarah the same or not? And of course, we're going to speak about all those details at length. And then the next question is always going to be, is the particular problem of the violation something which ultimately extends beyond itself? And when we care about things that extend beyond themselves, like Mumar L'Chol HaTorah Kula is an example where we're trying to weigh one against many. Or in Yehari Val Yavor, when we're also trying to weigh one against the totality. When it's one versus the entire system, so the question is always going to be in assessing the particular value. There are a couple of things I'm not going to cover for the sake of the efficiency of this year. But if we had more time, I probably would. And either way, it's not too much that I feel like it's even a miyad hamatzei. So with that in mind, let's just read into the Gemara. If everyone has the Gemara, Daf Daled Amud Beis open. So the Gemara is trying to bring a proof that a mumar la'oso davar, a mumar ochel nevelos l'te'avon, is actually able to shecht, assuming we can neutralize the local chashash of achilas nevela. And maybe because he doesn't care so much, so as long as we can neutralize that, and a siyul l'rava, as long as we can neutralize our chashash, he'd totally be a kasher person to do a shechita. So the Gemara brings the Tosefta. And the Tosefta says as follows. Leme misayei alei. Hakol shochdin andalad amebeiz. Va'afilu kusi, va'afilu arav, va'afilu Yisrael mumar. So even a kusi, apparently there's some chiddush about shechita that even a kusi can do it, that even an aril can do it, and even a yisrael mumah can do it. So the Gemara tries to analyze who these people are, where we'd have a hava mina that maybe they couldn't shech, and the maskana they could. Hi aril hechidami ilema mesu achiv machmas mila. If you say the aril is someone who is still an aril because his brothers died from mila, so hi yisrael malio, he doesn't need to get a mila. He's totally pater. So the aril, this aril can't be someone who is a mumar la aril. Because he hasn't done, is it? Sorry, this Arel can't be someone who didn't get a Mila because his brothers didn't. Elab Shita, because his brothers died. Elab Shita, Mumar La Arlos. He's a Mumar La Arlos. He's someone who really should be getting a Mila. But he's in defiance of the law. The Kasavar Mumar Ladavar Echad, that even though he's a Mumar, since he's a Mumar Ladavar Echad, which is not Shita, which is not Nevela, Lohave Mumar La Cholotor Kula. In other words, in simple terminology, if your mumrius doesn't apply to the particular halacha, which we expect standards, we expect rigor, so then it's not going to spill over. Each mitzvah, in other words, can be compartmentalized. And being a mumr la'arel won't impact your status vis-a-vis other dine Torah, to use the terminology we began in the introduction with. Ema seifa, vafilu Yisrael mumar. But we have mumar in this Tosefta. That the Tosafta tells us the mumar can do shechita. So hi mumar hechidami im mumar ladavar acher. We already have that from mumar la'arlos, which we already said can totally go ahead and shecht. Elalav mumar la'oso davar. So isn't it a mumar la'oso davar ukidirava? And we're trying to teach you that even a mumar linevela who is suspect, even with regarding to the particular halacha that we're dealing with, which we're dealing shechita, he's not going to shecht properly. Yet again, assuming you can neutralize the problem, the Tosefta tells you he can go and shecht; he's totally fine. Ukid Rava, and it's exactly like Rava. So at this point, we basically assessed the entire question. If it comes to being a mumar la'oso davar, so it's not going to have a spillover effect. If it comes to being a mumar for something else, that's a different topic. That has no impact legally, substantially, on the halacha that we're dealing with on shechita. Okay, great. You're a mumar la'arlo. You're a mumar, you know, litzitzis. You're a mumar, you know, to even do something worse. And that's very problematic. But it's not going to impact your status in shechita. But everyone would agree that a different question to weigh is not the objective question, the relationship of doing one mitzvah poorly to the rest of Tarek mitzvos. But if in this particular thing I have suspicious behavior, I'm a mumar, so you may think that alts chashad, alts maybe in terms of even being like a bar shechita, a bar this particular mitzvah, so maybe your shechita wouldn't work. But the Gemara says, no, it does work. The Tzadda says it does work. Rava says it does work. But the Gemara rejects that in favor of saying something else. Because just because we saw that mumar ladavar acher, a particular Maisa Aveira doesn't impact on the rest of Tarek Mitzvos. It could be that there are Averos, or maybe two Averos, maybe particular Averos that do extend beyond themselves. And so the book isn't closed. But we're always weighing an objective question in something's relationship to the rest of Tarek Mitzvos versus the local Chashad question, which is something totally different, which is in terms of being worried that because he has bad behavior here, he may continue to do that, or he's just removed himself from this particular Halacha. But it doesn't tell us anything about the broader question about the interrelationship of mitzvos. So the Gemara says, okay, we didn't think this before. We assume maybe mumar la'arel and any mumar la'davar acher is just compartmentalized. But the Gemara says, no, really maybe there actually is an Aveira. Maybe really forget about Rava. Rava's wrong. And you can, that when it comes to chasha, and maybe there's something else, mumar la'avodizara, something which is so bad, even if mumar la'davar acher generally isn't going to infect or affect the rest of Tarek Mitzvos, maybe Mumar L'Avodes Kochavim will. That's our Havamina. And so the Gemara brings in Ravanan and says, no, even Mumar L'Avodes Kochavim, the Tosafta is telling you can shecht, to Amar Rav Kid Ravanan, to Amar Ravanan Amar Shmuel, Yisrael Mumar L'Avodes Kochavim, Mutar Lacha Mishkitaso. Even if he's a Mumar L'Avodes Zara, something so severe as this, which may be different than a regular Mumar L'Davar Acher, it doesn't affect and influence the rest of Tarek Mitzvos. But when it comes to chashash in this particular area, that's something else, and that actually is a problem. Because we're not trying to ask this broader question in the interrelationship between mitzvos, but we're asking the much more local question. Can I trust his shechita if he's established that in shechita he doesn't take it seriously? And that's the Gemara over here. But what's interesting is that, And what we come up with the following conclusion, that no matter what the mitzvah, at least according to Rav Hanan, there's going to be no interplay between a mitzvah and another mitzvah. At least if that mitzvah is shchita. But when it comes to shchita itself, there we do judge, we make an internal assessment, and being an ochel neveil so the oven's a problem. This is what the Gemara assumes for now. And what will come out from Rav Hanan is that it sounds like Avodah Zarah doesn't have broader impact. But what's interesting from the Gemara is that if the Gemara really felt that this is what Rav Hanan was saying, its entire presentation here on should be totally different. It doesn't bring a raya that a mumar la'avodah zarah isn't a mumar la'kol Torah kula. If what Rav Hanan is saying is that avodah zarah has no broader, greater impact beyond itself, right, which is obviously maybe, you know, has no greater impact beyond itself, then the Gemara should try to bring a raya that mumar la'avodah zarah is not a mumar la'kol Torah kula. But at least initially, all it tries to bring a raya tells you with Achav and Yehoshaphat, and it just all it tells you is that you can eat from Mishchita. But it could be, if you read the words of Rav Hanan carefully, all he tells you is Mutar Lachal Mishchitaso. He doesn't say Mumar La'avodas Kochavim, Lav Mumar L'chol Torah Kula. He doesn't tell you there's no greater impact. He just tells you you can eat from Mishchita. Maybe even if there is impact, maybe if it does extend beyond itself, still you would be able to eat from Mishchita. And then even further, when the Gemara never uses the phrase Lav Mumar L'chol Torah Kula to describe Rav Hanan. If you look at when the Gemara finally tries to reject him, the Gemara doesn't use the phrase Mumar La'avodas Kochavim, Lav, or Mumar La'avodas Kochavim is a Mumar L'kol Torah Kula. It doesn't say that yet. And it doesn't bring a raya against him that he could have brought anything. He could have brought the many different psukim in the Torah with the Mefarshim that make it very clear that we treat Avodah Zarah like something which is called HaTorah Kula. But if you look, but it doesn't do that. It brings an example from Korbanos. And all it tells you in Korbanos is that when it comes to a Mumar La'avodah Zarah and a Mumar L'chal Shabbos, that he can't bring a Korban, unlike all the other narrower violations, which would just make him be considered a Miposha Yisrael. And Lo'oso Davar might be worse, Lo'oso Davar may not be worse, but that's all it tells you. It doesn't bring you a clear-cut raya that Mumar La'avodah Zarah is a Mumar L'chol Torah Kula, and that's what's against Rav Hanan. Because Rav Hanan could very well think Avodah Zarah is a very serious thing. Even when it finally formulates the phrase, it doesn't say Shekol HaModeh BeAvodah Zarah KeKover BeChol HaTorah Kula. It could be that Rav Hanan does think, where really, it really is like something which is so egregious. It's like being Kofer BeChol HaTorah Kula. But in terms of this bigger idea, which we're going to get to, of being HaKol HaKofer BeAvodah Zarah is Kehilu Modeh BeChol HaTorah Kula, so that's something totally different. I'm sorry, excuse me. It doesn't bring Kol HaModeh BeAvodah Zarah KeKover BeChol HaTorah Kula, but it does say this bigger idea, which sounds like it's more about being in the framework of Torah and Mitzvos, is what Avodah Zarah, not doing Avodah Zarah, really does for you. So the question really does become, you know, what is this Raya from Korbanos to be against Rav Hanan? I think you could say one of two things. Number one, you can say that it may be Korbanos is the one thing in the entire, we'll get back to that. But again, we'll get back to that. But it doesn't seem exactly so clear-cut that Rav Hanan has dismissed Avodah Zarah's greater impact, and it might be something particular to the nature of the rule of Mumar L'chol HaTorah Kula, to what you need in Shechita in particular. But we'll get back to that. But what does seem to be at the end of the day is there's a machlokes, whether we treat Mumar L'Avodah Zarah to be, at least regarding Shechita, a Mumar L'chol HaTorah Kula. Rav Hanan seems to say we don't, and he can chef. And the Man D'Amar, which we ultimately paskin by, you know, and the Rambam has very strong language, Harei Kekol Gegoy L'chol HaDvarim. It does seem to be that we say he is a mumar l'chol Torah Kula, he cannot shecht, and for that matter, maybe he's a mumar vis-a-vis all areas of the Torah, he's ineffective. Good. And as the Gemara does is on Hamad Aleph, where in the context of the Raya of Korbanos, that a mumar l'avodah zarah, or l'menaseh chesayayin, or the Shabbos, can't bring a korban, it also throws in mechalel Shabbos Shabbosos bifarhesya. So we have these two things, mumar l'chal Shabbos, mumar l'avodah zarah, and the question is, what impact does mumar l'avodah zarah really have vis-a-vis the rest of Dinei Torah, legabe shchita, legabe kol haTorah kula, and maybe even in a bigger way, leaving the kol haTorah kula principle in general, what is the relationship Avodah Zarah has to someone's commitment, someone's relationship to Taryag mitzvos. Shabbos is the addition, even though it's not quite Avodah Zarah, we don't say, Kol HaKofer. We don't even say Kol HaKofer. We don't even say Kol HaModeh B'Shabbos K'modeh L'chol Torah Kula. We don't say Kol HaModeh B'Shabbos K'ilu Modeh. We don't apply that same phrase of Shekula K'neged in this context. But Rashi seems to explain that the relationship between Shabbos and Avodah Zarah in this way, that they kind of separate themselves from the rest, has to do with the fact that it's like you're made sheker on Maisa Bereshis. You think that theologically, you think you're saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu maybe didn't create the world, Kivo Shavas Mikom Lachto, and that Shishesh Yamin also Hashem, and because of that, it's on the equivalent at least to Avodah Zarah. And Rav Rosen pointed out, ironically enough, the theology person we usually expect to be the Rambam over here doesn't think the Shabbos problem, which puts it in the grouping with Avodah Zarah, is kofer b'maisa bereishis, but he thinks it's because you're being machish on the oath, you know, beini uvein b'nei Yisrael. It has to do with your, you know, that the gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu singled out Klal Yisrael to give, that you didn't take, you're being machish against that, which may connect to why it has to be b'farhesia. Okay, we discussed those different things. The more nevuchim in the Rambam and the more nevuchim in general, like he talks about how, you know, yesh me'ayin, you know, the Ramban is very strong about reading bereishis as being about Yesh Me'ayin and the Ribono Sholem being the Mashkiach of the entire world, the Yotzer and the Borei. But there, you know, the Ramban, it has a very controversial view already about Yesh Me'ayin, very important in terms of the understanding how, you know, the Torah lends itself ambiguously, sometimes, you know, through the text. And it's subject to a degree of variation. And so the Rambam's Yesh Me'ayin, you know, he doesn't necessarily maybe take as seriously as the Ramban over there, but definitely connect up to this Rashi Rambam, how to look at the problem with being Mechal Shabbos Bifar Hesya. Just letting someone to the waiting room.
John?
Yeah.
Akiva Lipschitz is waiting.
Yeah, I just got him in. Okay, great. Welcome, Akiva. I'm sorry about that. I'm not really running the waiting room here. I apologize. I'm trying to... Okay, so that was the Shabbos thing. In terms of Avodah Zarah and its relation to the rest of Kol HaTorah Kula, so we need to think about a couple of things. What is it about Avodah Zarah in particular that makes it so terrible? But more that makes it so terrible, it compromises maybe your status, you know, vis-a-vis Kol Shahar Mitzvah. So Rav Rosenberg basically laid out four different options. You can debate the number. I don't know if it matters that much, but all the things I'm going to say are different. Some subtly different, but they all are different. And these are the different options in terms of what is the mechayev, what is so problematic about Avodah Zarah, and the mechayev of each and every particular category. You know, like the one we're talking about here, is it being having a status of a mumar for all other things? We were talking about Yarag Vayavor, but these are the different ways you can kind of think about Avodah Zarah, maybe Shabbos. So one is that it's a chomer ha'isr, there's nothing more severe than Avodah Zarah, in which case it kind of extends, the way I'm phrasing it. You know, it's much more severe and stringent, which should be part of the calculus. Also, the Maisa Avera Shavo, it's really the Chomer Isser or the Maisa Avera. The Isser is problematic, the Maisa is problematic, whatever it is. Then you also have it being like a Shir in the Gavra, being a Gavra Mumar, a Gavra Bogade, you know, like a traitor, you know, by kind of doing something like that. There's also the fact that it embedded in it is a major chilul Hashem, like a level of merida, like a chilul Hashem, not being a gavra bogeid, but the action itself kind of being certain merida or chilul Hashem. And then we suggested this other idea, which works well with the idea that kol hakofer b'avodah zarah kemodeh b'chol Torah kula, that avodah zarah kind of represents this linchpin idea that so much of the foundation of your commitment to the Ribono Shel Olam and your ability for all the other mitzvos that he commands us to be meaningful, is to have a very strong foundation of your theology, of the Ribono Shel Olam, who orchestrates his mitzvos to correspond to that foundation. And if you're missing it, if you're absent it, then it really takes away, makes everything else not meaningful. And by in turn, if you do it, So then we can look at the other 612 mitzvahs as important expressions of that basis. But once you have Anochi, once you have Lo Yi Elecha Elokim Elohim Achirim Al Panai, so then we just look at everything as a failed. Even if you violate, maybe all other mitzvahs, we just look at them narrowly and as misdeeds, but they don't cut into the core of your commitment. So that's the way to look at Avodah Zarah. And once we see that is the nature of Avodah Zarah, so we wonder, that's definitely true about Lo Sa'avdim. If you violate Avodah Zarah itself, you got a foreign god and you worship it. But what about the different subcategories of Avodah Zarah? Rav Rosenzweig was talking about, what about the Isser Hanah? What if you violate the Isser Hanah? The Pasuk says, Lo Yidbak Becha Me'uma Min Acherim, something we discussed yesterday in the Tosfos and Shabbos. Lo Yidbak Bialcha, that it's a Kula, interestingly enough, in the Tosfos and Shabbos. We spoke about Lo Yidbak Bialcha Me'uma, such a severe thing, you violate the Isser Hanah, you're not supposed to be Nene from Dvarim. Of Avodah Zarah, or that were used in the worship of Avodah Zarah, or that are accoutrements to Avodah Zarah. So what if you violate that? Have you done something of the same kind as Avodah Zarah itself? Or which one of them have you done? Have you done any? You also have Lifnei Iver, which is a major machlokas, we've already mentioned, the Malchamos and the Baal Ma'or. On Sanhedrin, it's Yudches and the Dav Arif, and Sanhedrin Ayin Dalit. What about if you have something which isn't technical Avodah Zarah? It's not like a subdivision, a sub-isser, but it's not technical Avodah Zarah, but you kind of are turning your back a little bit on the religion. You adopt a different religion. What about, as is famously known as Yishmaelim, Yishmaelus, Islam? So the Ritva says that there is Yehari Valyavor, even though Avodah Zarah, even though Avodah Yishmaelim is not, of Muhammad is not technically Avodah Zarah. Oh, we have another waiting room. I need someone else to run the waiting room. Even though it's not technical Avodah Zarah, still, because you're kind of, it's Kfira B'Torah's Moshe, it actually would be subject to Yaharik Val Yavor. So he actually does say, in terms of Yaharik Val Yavor, converting to Islam actually would be a problem. But of course, it's always about weighing what crosses you over the threshold to be Yaharik Val Yavor. So he says it's Kfira B'Torah's Moshe. The Radva is actually in a tshuva, in Chelek Dalid, in Sadi Beis, says it's about betrayal. You're kind of betraying the religion. And the Ritva limits it to Yaharik Val Yavor and doesn't extend it to Mumar. You wouldn't be a Mumar L'chol Torah Kula if you did, like Avodah Zarah, if you did Avodah Yishmaelim. That wouldn't make you Mumar. But the Radva is extensive. The Radva brings a Raya to Mumar from Yaharik Val Yavor. And the Radva is actually, so interestingly enough, he quotes the Rambam, who says in Machalas Hasuros, who says in the Tshuva, who also says in the Geres Hashmad, the Tshuva in Tav Memches, and the Geres Hashmad, very wonderful, the Geres Hashmad says, criticizes anybody for thinking that Yishmaelus is really Avodah Zarah. And the Ravaz, in quoting that, says, even though it's not Avodah Zarah, it's such a merida, it's such a betrayal, of course. There's going to be Yaharik Val Yavor, of course. There's going to be Mumar. He extends it and treats the category of Mumar. And Yaharik Val Yavor, similarly. But the Rambam, if you look, never says there's even Yaharik Val Yavor. And it must only be, as Rav Rosenzweig was explaining, out of the conviction of the Radvaz, that even though, yes, it's not Avodah Zarah, and the Rambam never says anything more than that, it must be, it's such a betrayal, even though it's not technically violating the details of the Lav, of Lo Sa'avdim, it's such a betrayal that it has to be Yaharik Val Yavor. That must be enough for Yaharik Val Yavor, and that must also be enough for... how do I get rid of this? And that must also be enough for, security. Okay, great. That might also be enough for, that might also be enough when it comes to Mumar, the Ravas thinks. Okay, very good. That's in terms of that. In terms of Minim and Apikorsim for Yaharik Val Yavor, so that's also an interesting question. Even if not only limited, to the Chomer Avera, Avodah Zarah isn't just limited to being the Chomer Sa'isr. Because remember, if Yaharik Val Yavor, the problem, we'll get back to it more extensively, but because we did it, we can do this now. If it was only about the Chomer HaAvera, so again, Avodah Yishmaelim is not Avodah Zarah. Maybe he doesn't have that Chomer Sa'avera. But as the Ravaz is saying with Begida, and the Ritva is saying with Piras B'Torah Moshe, so you'd wonder, what about Minim and Apikorsim for Yaharik Val Yavor? So even in terms of that, is that turning your back? You know, are you like throwing your lot in with others and neglecting and you know, betraying Klal Yisrael? You know, sometimes atheists and people who at least profess to be atheists, although, you know, sometimes they aren't. And even when they are, and they claim that they're Amecha Ami people, they love the Jewish people, but they're not Elokai Elokai people. They don't necessarily have the, you know, that dimension of Yahadus. Still very often their Amecha Ami, Rebbe Rosenzweig explained in his Lashon, is an expression of their Elokai Elokai. And you wouldn't be that convinced about your connection to Klal Yisrael. You wouldn't give up your life for them if there really was no, not, you know, not, if there wasn't even something, maybe undetectable from his perspective, but if there wasn't something that connected him to the Ribbono Shel Olam, to Elokei Yisrael. So it's really also about weighing that. Would, you know, it's a big machlokes in the discussion if Abi Korsum Aminim would also be in Yehari Vayavar. But the reason we're talking about this again is besides, you know, wondering, of course, what the problem, what makes you have to give up your life, you know, what problem, what, you know, what exactly is problematic that would make you have to give up your life that's not worth it. It's also in terms of assessing what the particular issue in Avodah Zarah is. And if we could extend that to other kinds of Avodah Zarah, maybe not even Avodah Zarah is in Maisa, but in spirit, in some dimension. So that, so we mentioned Israel, no, we mentioned the Iver, we mentioned Islam, maybe Dirabanans of Avodah Zarah. We also mentioned Lavim, She'inam Mechuyavim Misa. You have also Mitzvah Zaseis in Avodah Zarah, like Abeta Abdun, you have to destroy all places in Eretz Yisrael, maybe even some level in Chutz Aretz. You don't have to seek after it, but if you have it, you have to destroy it. You have a mitzvah to destroy things, and there's actually an isser that comes from that of rotzei v'kiyumo, that you can't have even a financial interest in the maintenance, the preservation of something which is a chefta shel avodah zarah. So what if you violated that aseh? You were rotzei v'kiyumo. What if you didn't do abei ta'abdu in the mitzvah's aseh to destroy avodah zarahs, the komas avodah zarah? What about machshava? So we discuss all these different things in terms of whether they qualify on the same level of mechayev as Avodah Zarah would, for how much is it like Avodah Zarah, and would they qualify for other things which we're going to discuss. And you have to ask the same things by Shabbos. The same things are true by Shabbos. I'm thinking about the different subcategories of Shabbos, and if they would be Shabbos enough to qualify for something like Mumer L'chol Torah Kula. The same way we were asking if these things are Avodah Zarah enough to qualify for Mumer L'chol Torah Kula to affect your relationship to the rest of Tayag Mitzvos. So in our case particularly, when thinking about Avodah Zarah, we're focused on if a mumar, ledavar acher, a mumar is a mumar l'chol haTorah kula. And the relationship between your displayed behavior or orientation towards a particular mitzvah can affect, in fact, defect your status, even having not done any of those things, l'chol haTorah kula. And that's what we're weighing all these subcategories against, and if they qualify to be treated but of course, binyanim acherim, in other things, we can expand or also limit which amount of these things that I listed of Isra and Alif and Iver would actually qualify to be problematic. And that's very important. Everyone understands that. That's good. Everyone understands that point. I think I've even beat it to a pulp a little bit. You could just nod your head if you, yeah, okay, great. But the day of Rav Anan is actually, ironically, part of this whole thing, but the opposite a little bit. Because I think there are two ways to understand Rav Anan. One way is to understand that he really doesn't think that Avodah Zarah is anything other than Mila, is anything, well, that may be part of it, but is anything other than just like another Maisa Avera. It's just like, okay, it's Avodah Zarah, it's bad, has a serious, you know, consequences, but it's just another Isser. In which case, obviously, it doesn't affect anything else. And we already closed that book effectively on when we said Mumr L'davar Acher, Mumr L'Arel, isn't a Mumr L'chol Torah Kula. It's just another Aveira. So that's just that could be Rav Anan. But I think the other way, and it's not so Chamor Kolkach, it's just another case of Arel. And therefore, obviously, in terms of the question of influence it has on Tarag Mitzvos, it really, the answer is none. The other way to understand Rav Anan, though, is that there is Chumra, it is actually Chamor, but it doesn't have the ability to influence entirely every single halacha, every other mitzvah, even if it's one of the most serious things, even if we really do say, kol hamodeh ba kekover b'chol Torah kula, after all, it was said to me pi ha'gvura, with anochi Hashem alokecha, it really is very serious, I don't need to prove it to you, for all the different things we have already spoken about. And he may think it really is very serious. But And it's even could go over the Lakula, but it doesn't mean that he has a din mumar, Lakola Tarakula. Because there are two ways to understand the phrase mumar kimumar lakola tarakula. Number one, at the very least, when mumar lakola tarakula ain't low, it's not mean, not being a mumar lakola tarakula means that there's no kesher between one thing and the other on a halachic, consequential level. That it doesn't affect the psak in the end of the day. The gemar din, the halacha lemaisa. That's at the very least what saying lav kimumar lechol ha-torakula means. It has to mean at least that. But it could also mean, and it doesn't always have to mean, but it could also mean, number two, that it doesn't have impact. It doesn't have influence in terms of one's relationship to the rest of kol ha-torakula, to a person's status begavra vis-a-vis tayag mitzvos. And that's what we could mean. Even more than just not being effective in this particular halacha, it could also even mean more that there's no impact. In other words, you could say something specific, avodah zarah of all things affects your entire status. Surely, if it would actually take away your kedushas yisrael, actually, then you'd be a goy. If avodah zarah could affect your status, and maybe even take away your kedushas yisrael, so you'd be like a goy. And we need to know the halacha of goy in the particular instance, right? But if not, it can still infect and defect the entire gavra in a serious way. Doing avodah zarah, I think even for Rav Hanan, does that. It affects you. However, in evaluating the particular din and the necessary credentials, being defective, a crusade, you know, a rebel, that's contingent upon what the halacha requires and depends. So if shechita is a kind of little bit more than a ma'isa kof, you just need koach gavra, you know, given, you know, it's kehilchasa, and maybe even a goy, as long as you do the shechita right, it's nothing more than just a koach gavra, and maybe even a goy is kasher midaraisa and shechita, then being kekofer b'kol torakula, even if kegoy gamor, and especially if he's not kegoy gamor, but just a really, really infected Yisrael, maybe le'inyan zeh, we have no issue. Maybe shechita is going to be totally kasher. And in that sense, it's merely that he has no din of mumar l'chol ha-torakula. But maybe l'gabe other things, he does have that status of being affected. If the avodah zarah, defected part, undercuts the prerequisites and the core enough of the particular thing we're judging. So you could look at Rav Hanan and say, avodah zarah isn't that big a deal. And it's just like any other avera. And in that sense, I think lav mumar l'chol ha-torakula means that it basically means that there's no broader effects. It's very narrow. That's what it first means. And it also means that he's kosher for this. He's effective. Or you can basically say, no, avodah zarah is mipi agvura. On that level, it really is l'chol ha-torakula. But for one reason or another, take shechita, the legal halachic implication of it doesn't interfere. And B, nevertheless, he's kosher. So it could be, for example, the difference between Mila and Avodah Zarah. Like, Mila is not a Mumar, in the sense of the narrow, it really doesn't have any influence. And Avodah Zarah is for sure not narrow, but it may not per se disqualify each area of Torah the way an actual Mumar, L'Oso Davar, will actually disqualify in each and every area of Torah. And then we could even acknowledge for Rav Hanan some level of L'Chol Ha-Torakula, even if L'Maisa, it doesn't always disqualify him. Note, as I said, the Gemara never says for Rav Hanan the words lav kimumar l'chol ha-torakula. Not once. So if Rav Hanan is saying it's chamor, yes, but it's not impactful vis-a-vis my status or ma'amad as effective in all mitzvos or defective in all mitzvos, so shechita is one, for example, that it's not going to be a problem, since it may just be a bit more than a ma'isa kof. Obviously, ma'isa kof is possible, but it's a little bit more than that. And that would basically help us, he actually helps us in determining the mechayiv of certain principles too. Since you have avodah zarah, but really maybe, right. Like, right, because since here it's avodah zarah, but really maybe nothing gets you past the point of no return. Nothing, even though it's avodah zarah, and even though it's so serious, it could be that everything will be fine, and there's no problem. Of being ineffective in Kol HaTorakula. So just like the others, Avodah Zarah is a Mechayev of being ineffective. And what about lesser infractions are also, they are also Bezeh HaMechayev in being ineffective, L'Kol HaTorakula. So the way we were saying, the way we were saying about all the other subcategories of Avodah Zarah, that maybe they don't cross the threshold for Mumar L'Avodah Zarah, Ki Mumar L'Chol Torah Kula, for Rav Hanan, we could say the same thing just in Avodah Zarah itself. Because even though it's problematic, maybe it just doesn't cross the threshold that would make you Ki Mumar L'Chol HaTorah Kula. Right. Great. So we read the Gemara, especially, basically if you read like the Netziv, we wanted to go back to this. Why is the Raya that the Gemara brings against Rav Hanan? Sorry, it's taking a little longer than I thought. Why is the Raya the Gemara is bringing against Rav Hanan not of the nature that Mumar, L'Avodah Zarah, is a Mumar L'Chol Torah Kula? And I was trying to suggest, the Netziv I think kind of implies this too, that it doesn't mean that Rav Hanan doesn't think. Rav Hanan might think he is a Mumar L'Chol Torah Kula. But we're bringing a raya from Karbanos to Shechita. In other words, maybe what the idea is, as the Netziv suggests, that even if that what we're really attacking is whether or not his Shechita is going to be valid. And if in Karbanos, a Mumar L'Avodah Zarah cannot bring Makriv Korban, he's not a Bar HaKrava, so because of the connection between the ability to do Shechita in Kachim and Chulin, it would disqualify his Shechita. And the raya against Rav Hanan is that this Mumar L'Avodah Zarah is not able to bring karbanos, memela, he'll be disqualified from doing shchita. But a goy, maybe midaraisa does work. A goy could always bring a korban, no matter what. So that's one reason. Even if I think Rav Hanan holds he is avodah zarah is very serious, still we would say it would be a raya for shchita. The other option is, I'm not going to say this as extensively as I wanted to, just because of the time. The other option is that, you know, notwithstanding the relationship between Kachim and Chulin, which is a really gishmak idea, the other option is to say that if in an area of Korban where we're so forgiving, where even Miposhe Yisrael, for the sake, Kadesha Yatzur B'tshuva, we're willing to overlook Maisa Averas so that he can bring a Korban, notwithstanding the particular La'oso Dabar problem, of course, that may be a technical issue of Vishab Midiyaso, but typically we're so forgiving of Korbanos, if we're not even forgiving of a Mumar L'Avodah Zarah in Karbanos, that means that his Mumrius in Avodah Zarah does for sure extend to all areas, including Shechita, because it's just so problematic. And I'll remind you that this situation particularly highlights more than anything how Avodah Zarah is totally egregious, and there's no return. Because even though, generally speaking, we say Kadesh Shiyachzru B'tshuva, we'll let him bring a Korban, even though we'll let him bring a korban, even though he's really a problem, we still won't let the Mumar L'Avodah Zarah. Because remember, that Mumar L'Avodah Zarah, you know, part of the initiation of Klal Yisrael in Karbanos, in Shechita, was to particularly take them away from having dual allegiances to Avodah Zarah. To be Nechna Shalo Yizbechu Od, Laman Shalo Yizbechu Od, Al Pnei HaSadeh. Because in order to be in the incubator, to develop the foundation of Ovdei Hashem, we needed to specifically eradicate entirely, and then, as the Rambam says in Mor Nevuchim, transform their impulse from Avodah Zarah entirely, exclusively, into Avodah Hashem. So that makes Avodah Zarah particularly problematic in terms of being the foundation for Avodas Hashem. And even in the world of Karbanos, it would be totally unacceptable if you're a personality who doesn't have the framework of Avodas Hashem. And it's why over here, even more than anywhere, maybe it's why it brings in Yayin Nesach, because the problem with Yayin Nesach, I can't explain this now at length, but the Rambam counts it as like a separate Isra Avodah Zarah. Yayin Nesach may be the goof of the problem of corrupting Avodas Hashem with foreign Avodos. And it's a very interesting idea. I don't have time for it, and it isn't something Rav Rosenzweig discussed, so I'm going to leave that by the side. But it just highlights and brings into focus that even when we're pretty forgiving in the world of Karbanos, Avodah Zarah is particularly egregious because you don't have the backdrop of an Ovei Hashem in order to be Makriv. And as such, maybe even if Rav Hanan thinks Avodah Zarah is really bad, you needed this Braisa regarding Karbanos, which just thinks Avodah Zarah is irrevocable, to teach Rav Hanan that it doesn't matter, you know, maybe it's a Shechita thing. He's totally unacceptable. He's missing the framework entirely. That makes everything unacceptable. And that's the Gemara's response to Rav Hanan. I think that's possible that you can say. Okay, great. So I think given the nature of Avodah Zarah, We want to know what exactly it's about, and if it could extend to lower levels of Hanah, Bifne'iver, etc., that list that I mentioned, and within the and also within the Lekol Torah Kula question. If not here in the Lekol Torah Kula question of Mummar, maybe, and maybe even Avodah Zarah itself doesn't qualify here, Lerev Anan, so what about other areas? And similarly, what about all these questions with regards to Shabbosos, Bifarhesia? So the category we want to analyze next is Gimel Averos, specifically, right? Because even if we say what we say in Mumar Lechol Torah Kula, what would be the question about Yiharig Valyavor, the Gimel Averos? So we say, according to the Chachamim, who say you are Yiharig Valyavor for Avodah Zarah, Bitzina, so for sure, Avodah Zarah obviously has this very endemic to Torah, this very foundational impact, such that you give up your life rather than go ahead. But Rabbi Yishmael thinks that Avodah Zarah isn't something you give up your life for, but only Averos, which you do Bifar Hesia. But Bitzina, even for the Gemal Averos, you're not going to give up your life. That's Rabbi Yishmael in Sanhedrin. So if we say you're a Mumar L'Avodah Zarah is a Mumar L'Chol Torah Kula, so likely the Chachamim, that's probably exactly like the Chachamim. The Chachamim who say, of course you give up your life for Yarek Valyav or Avodah Zarah. Yarek Valyav or Avodah Zarah. But what about Ravanan? Ravanan who doesn't say Mumar L'Chol Torah Kula, would he think that maybe you do give up your life for the Chachamim? Do you give up your life for Avodah Zarah like the Chachamim? Or maybe, does he also hold like Rabbi Yishmael? But again, in light of what we said about Rav Anan, it's very likely, even Rav Anan is Mechalek. For sure the Mandamar holds Mumar L'Chol Torah Kula, Avodah Zarah is Mumar L'Chol Torah Kula, so he probably holds like the Chachamim. What about Rav Anan? So Avodah Zarah is definitely terrible, but maybe, listen, like people are different, are peculiar. Sometimes, they do weird things that are problematic, they do Avodah Zarah. But maybe, in general, he's not such a bad guy. It doesn't really influence everything else. So the question is, what about the Gimel Aveira? So you have Avodah Zarah on the list, Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damim. Remember, there's no Shabbos. Rabbi Yishmael says that even Avodah Zarah is not on the list, because only Farhesia. But you also have to remember that in assessing Gimel Aveiros and what the problem there is, so you need to think about the fact that Avodah Zarah, that Yehari Valyavor is different. Because besides the fact that it's an Isra of Avodah Zarah, there's also Pikuach Nefesh involved, which is usually something we take very seriously. And also, you're being forced to do it. It's against your will. So even though the Avera is Avodah Zarah, it's not like Mumar L'Chol Torah Kula, where you're literally deciding to do Avodah Zarah. Here, there's Pikuach Nefesh, which is a very important Jewish value, which is Docha almost everything, V'chabahem, and you also have the fact that he's doing it be'onis, against his will. When it comes to Shabbos, we give the heter of Pikuach Nefesh. Never mind if on Shabbos somehow there was an onus, to violate Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh. So, in terms of understanding Shabbos, in terms of its chumra, in terms of the nature of the problem, so you have to keep that in mind, that of course we give the heter to Shabbos of Pikuach Nefesh. And never mind, if you're being forced to do it. Pikuach Nefesh is always Docha Shabbos. So some actually say that maybe really, you would have to give up your life for Shabbos if not for the rationale of Chilal Shabbos Achas Kadei L'Kayim Shabbos Zacherim, Shabbos Zacheros, that we actually would have said Yarek Layavor, but Rav Rozek didn't like that idea so much. So generally speaking, when you think about the fact that it's Be'ones, and that it's there's Pikuach Nefesh involved, that's already reason to think Yehari Vayavor is a different category than Avodah Zarah, than Mumar L'Chol Torah Kula, excuse me. And that already within that, within Yehari Vayavor, you see Avodah Zarah being put on a pedestal above, Shabbos. So in Avodah Zarah, you have Pikuach Nefesh and Ones. There's not Rishus because of that, because, you're not doing it intentionally, willfully. But maybe there's the Chumras Ha'isr part, the fact that the Isr is just so terrible, so toxic, or the fact that there's Kiddush V'Chilul Hashem, which is a machlokes between the Ramban and the Baal Ma'or in Sanhedrin, whether the Mechayev of Yehareg Vayavor is Kiddush Hashem, which is what the Baal Ma'or says, or the Chumras Ha'avera of the Gimel Averos, which is the view of the Ramban. So what is the machlokes between Rabbi Yishmael and the Chacham? That's what we have to look at if we want to understand what the mechayev of Yehar Glayavor is. To then understand to evaluate the different isurim. That would theoretically be, you'd have to give up your life for. So, what is the machlokes? For Rabbi Yishmael, what happened? Why does Rabbi Yishmael say, you never give up your life for Averos Bitsena, but before Hesed, you give up, of course you give up your life. What happened to the Chumras HaAvera? What happened to Chilul the Kiddush? So I think what you can basically say is Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Rosenzweig, I'm speaking for Rabbi Rosenzweig, Rabbi Yishmael thinks that the Chumras HaIsser, Chumras HaAvera always has a Heter of Pikuach Nefesh. And when it comes to Kiddush V'Chilul, there's no Heter. It's very, very clear. There's just no Heter B'Kuach Nefesh when it comes to Chumras HaAveira. When it comes to Chilul Hashem and Kiddush Hashem, there's no Heter B'Kuach Nefesh. And therefore, you always have to give up your life if you're going to be Mechal Hashem Hashem before Hesia. It's not about the Gimel Averus. And he obviously also assumes, which is important, that there's no such thing as Chilul and Kiddush Hashem B'Tzina. He thinks Kiddush V'Chilul Hashem is when you're on display in public and you're making a Chilul Hashem, but that the idea of Chilul Hashem can't really exist in the privacy of one's own home. That's what he has to assume, which is why he thinks you only give up your life for Befar Hesia. The Rambam actually thinks, though, that Kiddush, there is Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem even B'Tzina. Unlike the Shulchan Aruch who puts the laws of Yehari Vayavor in Avodah Zarah, he didn't have Yisori HaTorah, but he put them in Avodah Zarah. The Rambam puts the laws in Yisori HaTorah. Remember, the Rambam has Hilchos Avodah Zarah. It could have been an expression of the Chumras HaIsser, but he puts it in the laws of Yisori HaTorah. And in Perek Hey, he begins the Perek talking about how Kol Beis Yisrael, every single person given the choice to do one of violate one of the three Averos, or to die, he should die. He should be Mekadosh Shem Shemayim. At the end of the Perek, he talks about how Talmidei Chachamim, not in the Gimel Averos, but in smaller daily routines, are supposed to be Mekadosh Hashem and not be Mechal Hashem Shemayim. For the Rambam, there's a notion of Kiddush and Chilul Hashem, not only in the public eye, not only for these Gimel Averos, but even the privacy of one's own home, even when in a person's daily routine, daily actions. So it's possible that even the Gimel Averos, Bitsina, the Mechayiv, is not Chumras HaIsser, but a different kind of Kiddush, Shem Hashem, and Chilul Hashem, which is very important. But Rabbi Yishmael assumes that there's no Chumras HaIsser problem, and Pikuach Nefesh always wins, and there always is a Chilul Hashem problem, but that Chilul Hashem problem is only Bifar Hesya and not Bitzina. But the Rambam thinks the idea is that there could be Kiddush V'Chilul Hashem, even Bitzina. So the Chachamim can basically say either that there is a Heter of Pikuach Nefesh. They probably say that there is a Heter of Pikuach Nefesh for Chumras HaIsser, but just not for these three Averos. But not because these Averos are much more chamor than the other ones. Rav Rosenzweig didn't want to say that. Because again, it's Be'ones, Pikuach Nefesh is a very high value. Sometimes we even say for Refuah, when you're dying, we don't let you violate these Averos, and rather we tell you to die. V'chai Bahem is basically the highest value, but maybe the idea is that not if it compromises the integrity on your relationship with Hashem. Maybe it's internal to V'chai Bahem. Really, we always say V'chai Bahem is the most important value, but sometimes, as the Minchas Chinuch in Mitzvah Reish Samach Zayin says, and the makor of this is V'ahavta Recha Kamocha, of course, that's the Gemara, V'ahavta Recha Kamocha, is why you give up your life for Avodah Zarah. It's because doing Avodah Zarah compromises on the integrity. It's a qualification of V'chai Bahem, because V'chai Bahem isn't just that you should live life, physical life. V'chai Bahem, that always wins. So you should live a physical life, but what real life really is meaningful spiritual life. And it could be that if you compromise the integrity of the whole, if you violate something like Avodah Zarah, it's not really V'chai Bahem anymore. So even if V'chai Bahem always is our central concern, our only concern, in these three Averos, it could be that you're compromising on Be'etzem, what V'chai Bahem is, and it's an internal problem having to do with V'chai Bahem. So really, there's nothing enough to override V'chai Bahem, but it's really just a way, and maybe the way to think about this is that you can't ever override V'chai Bahem, but maybe these three things are a way to promote Kiddush V'Chilul Hashem, Afilu B'Tzina, that not doing Avodah Zarah, not doing these things, Afilu B'Tzina, without, you know, parhesi on everything, would still be a kind of kiddush v'chilul Hashem, like we were talking about with the Rambam. And that would be why the Chachamim disagree that these three things. We always care about what's actually being violated, and it's a more internal v'chai bahem issue, and or a kiddush v'chilul Hashem thing that having to do with, you know, these three averos afilu b'tzina that you could have. So basically, in short, you could basically say that for Rabbi Yishmael, there's no Yehar Vayava for the Gimel, but yes for Chilul. And they say, and the Chachamim say, that the Gimel themselves, maybe this is a way to think about it, the Gimel themselves are Chilul, and the most kind of Chilul. Which is why even Bitsina, they are Chilul by definition, intrinsically. Now, it's not about the setting in which those Averos take place, but they themselves are Kiddush V'Chilul Hashem. A kind of, which is, I think, very connected, of course, in a certain way, to, you know, Shem Hashem Esayev Al Yadecha, the reflection of your relationship to the totality of the system, and it even encompassing daily routine activities as a way for Kiddush V'Chilul Hashem in one's own personal life. The Nafka Mina really between these two approaches, you know, of the chil, like the fact that only for chil, the chil Hashem of Rabbi Yishmael is what's the mechayev, and for the Chachamim, it's a little bit different. So there's this idea of like Hanas Atzman, that the Baal Mor extends Hanas Atzman to the Gimel Averos. So Hanas Atzman, you know, even Tegila Arise, if you don't do it as an Avera, but you do it, you know, for when you're forced, you do it Lahanas Atzmecha for your own pleasure. So the Baal Mor extends it, the Ramban doesn't like it. But the Baal Mor extends it because if you're thinking about it in terms of like classical Chilul Hashem, so then of course, if it's Lahanas Atzman, it should work, because you're not doing it as a merida against the Ribono Shel Olam. You're doing Lahanas Atzmecha, so you shouldn't have to give up your life for it. But if... The non-Jew, sorry, yeah, the non-Jew. Yeah, thank you for clarifying. Yeah, if the non-Jew is doing it, you know, forcing you to do it, not as a matter of principle, but just, so that's not really Chilul Hashem. If that's how you look at Chilul Hashem, as just like this public demonstration. But if you think as more internal to the problems with the violations, that the Gimel Averos are maybe even a kind of Kiddush V'Chilul, compromising on V'Chai Bohem itself, and those ideas are a little bit different. So then, you know, even Halahanas Atzmo won't help you, won't get you anywhere, because the Averos themselves, doing them, are what is exactly the problem. That's one after you. The other one is, what happens if you transgress Yehard Val Yavor? So, are you chayiv? If you were chayiv to give up your life and you didn't, what happens? Can you be put to death by Beis Din? So, there are actually deos, two deos in Tosvos, Rabbeinu David, Rabbeinu David Bonfeld, in quoted in Tosvos, and the Yireim seem to think you actually would be mischayiv benafsho afterwards. But typically, you know, the Rambam, it's a ptur onet, it's a lenar losasa davar. You should have given up your life, but we're not going to say you're chayiv. Chayiv because of it. So one way to look at why you're exempt is because it's a ptur ones, even though you had no hector bikuach nefesh, still there was a ptur ones. So you're not going to be chayiv. You're not going to be chayiv. You're not going to be chayiv misa anymore. But the other way to really think about it is that, you know, really the reason you had to give up your life, you didn't meet the challenge. Maybe you didn't meet the challenge that you should have been raised up to the kiddush Hashem. But that's fine because you're honest. And v'chai bahem applies technically to be able that you shouldn't have to give up your life. Like, we should say v'chai bahem. But maybe the idea was that kiddush v'chilul were the mechayev that you should have given up your life. It was an opportunity for kiddush v'chilul Hashem. But now that's history. You didn't do anything wrong. But now it's just history. And so the chilul of the kiddush Hashem, well, you didn't really violate it. It was an opportunity to do it. You were mechal Hashem Hashem, but it was an expression of maybe of v'chai bahem. But now that that's over, and it's in the past, it's behind us, you're not going to be held accountable. So that was, you know, in terms of Yehar Gval Yavor, we have in figuring out, in terms of what maybe the problem would be, the Chomer Sa'iser, maybe it's not making, life's not worth living anymore, and that's what's so problematic, just jeopardizes your relationship to the entire system, which, without which, you know, what is even V'chai Bahem? So that's something about that versus, you know, something like Mumer L'chol Torah Kula. And what would be the problem there? What would make you a mumer l'kol Torah Kula there versus what would make you have to give up your life? I mean, we obviously already discussed, you know, with Islam, giving up your life, that same kind of idea about just turning your back and not really having that framework. We also, again, I'm not going to speak about this at length, but another category we spoke of was Matzilin Oso Benafsho. That if a person's running to do a particular avera, we can actually save himself from himself by taking his life before he does it. And we apply that to Shvichas Damim and Gilui Arayos. So there, maybe it's you know, and we don't have a Avodah Zarah on the list. There's certainly no Shabbos. You know, there it's really about savaging the Selam Elokim and that being the problem. And it's really, you know, our ability to take into our own hands, you know, his decision and take his life. And, you know, Selam Elokim plays a big role there. And Gilui Arayos, so again, it could be the standards are also different because, like I said, it's more focused on protecting himself from himself and us doing that protection. So it could be that, you know, that wouldn't allow you if he's going to go do Avodah Zarah. We can't just take his life from him. But if it's saving the Selam Elokim, him going attacking it, and so then maybe, you know, we would take his life before he took another one or something like that. So that was Matzilin Oso Benafsho. So I think we proved a little bit just that you have to think about the Mechayev of Yehari Vayavor as a separate, and this one of Matzilin as it also, and each of them has separate questions from the Chol Torah Kula. Even I think for Evanan, and in each case, it's a question of what level of impact crosses the threshold L'chol HaTorah Kula, Yehari Vayavor. You know, is it any of these three or four, maybe different, the different lists, tell you something about these about the nature of these Averos, about the Mechayev. The fact that there are different lists may tell you that there's something different about each one of these areas of Halacha. Maris Ayin is an interesting one in Yehari Vayavor. You wouldn't say that you'd give up, you'd be considered a Mumar L'chol HaTorah Kula maybe, if you did a Maris Ayin of Avodah Zarah, but maybe you would say for Yehari Vayavor, you would. You know, if it's like this public demonstration to the perception, the public perception about Avodah Zarah. So you may just draw your lines to different places. The Ravaz assumed that we crossed the lines from Yehari Vayavor into Mumar L'chol HaTorah Kula and we equated them. The Ritva just said it about Yehari Vayavor, but he didn't say anything about Mumar L'chol HaTorah Kula. So it really is the issue. So the similar thing is what kind of Avodah Zarah? You know, what issue? You know, what is the issue in Avodah Zarah itself? So you have that. Also, you'd have that question in the korban that you bring for violating Avodah Zarah. It took me a little bit longer than I thought, so I'm not going to go as much into this. But basically, the pasuk says v'chi sishku v'lo sa'asu es kol hamitzvos ha'ela, that you have to bring this the korban. I would read the psukim. If you violate something and you don't. If you don't do one of the mitzvos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then you have to bring a korban. You violated like as kol asher tziva Hashem. And the Ibn Ezra kind of there's a little confused. Like it kind of says makes the comment that if you violate anything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you not to do, so you'd have to bring a korban. That's just what the Pashup Shat sounds like. But Rashi already says like ezehu davar echad, that it's like you're kofer b'chol Torah Kula. It's like you've done none, all. It's like you haven't done any of the mitzvos to fit the words of the pasuk. Which the Ramban kind of says, like points out, like it's very confusing with the psukim, making it sound like it's any mitzvah in the Torah or all mitzvos in the Torah, but really it's just the korban avodah zarah. But the idea we could point out, it's the Ramban here and a lot of other places. Also, Shemos Chav Gimel Yud Gimel is another example. If there's a different time, I would love to go into it. It's very interesting. But maybe the idea is the equivalent of violating all of Torah is not doing is violating Avodah Zarah. Which is why the impression the Psukim give you is that you violated Kol Torah Kula, even if all you've really done is Avodah Zarah. All you've really done is Avodah Zarah. It has that equivalent because it's the linchpin, it's the backbone to your obligations to make those meaningful in your Avodah Hashem. And without it, or in violation of it, it's kind of like compromising on the entire system of mitzvos, which is why in that framework, I don't need to explain this more now because we did this sugya, but earlier we hadn't. Ola in that context comes with four chatas, and which Rav Rosenzweig made a point about. So the question is, like within the korban avodah zarah, you have the same question. You know, where does it in turn? Is it iser hanav avodah zarah? Is it lifnei ibra avodah zarah? Is it Avodas Yishma Eilim? Like, what kind of Avodah Zarah will make you bring this korban? It's a different threshold question on top of the other three that we mentioned. And then the question also is going to be, what if what if, you know, besides those things like Isra Hana, Avodah Zarah, and Lifnei Iver, where would it fall if you were Mumar L'chol Torah Kula with the exception of Avodah Zarah and Shabbos? How would that work out? So the Shulchan Aruch actually has this quoting Rabbeinu Yerucham, but if that Mumar L'chol Torah Kula except those two things would actually be Mumar L'chol Torah Kula, it would be his status. And I think it would be hard, if you think it's Chumrah, I think you'd have a hard time, it would be suspicious. Because you haven't maybe done anything that's chamer enough to make you a mumar l'chol Torah kula, even if you did all those things except those two. The Rashba thinks just the majority of the Torah will make you a mumar l'chol Torah kula, violating the majority of it. And the Rav Akiva Eiger is like a good point. Like he says, maybe in order for it to reach the status, because maybe it's not enough in terms of chomer, maybe you have to at least be mechal Shabbos b'tzina to make it at least get closer. But in terms of thinking of how bad this really is, how much is it, you know, like Avodah Zarah, which does cross over the threshold to make you Mumar L'chol Torah Kula? What about L'chol Torah Kula Chutz Mishtei Elu, from Shabbos and Avodah Zarah? And it's interesting because the Rabbeinu Yerucham like, probably get this from the language of Kim Mumar L'chol Torah Kula. If we're treating Avodah Zarah Kim Mumar L'chol Torah Kula, then a Mumar L'chol Torah Kula, except these two, should also probably be a category. But it's a bit tricky because of the Chomer part. The Ravaz has this idea, says that Avodas HaYishma'elim is like a Mumar L'chol Torah Kula. That's his version of it. But as Rav Rosen pointed out, it's not really Mumar L'chol Torah Kula. It's just a subcategory of what makes Avodah Zarah so problematic. The linchpin, the idea of embracing another religion and turning your back on your own, is like you're abandoning ship. And so it's possible that even though the Ravaz thinks Mumar L'chol Torah Kula is a category, maybe that's what he attributes to Yishma'elim being a Mumar L'chol Torah Kula. Really, it's his Mumar L'chol Torah Kula isn't the same as Rabbeinu Yerucham and the Shulchan Aruch's Mumar L'chol Torah Kula. Like, what would the Ravaz say about who the Ravaz who considers Avodah Yishma'elim Mumar L'chol Torah Kula because of the category of Mumar L'chol Torah Kula? So what would he say? He might say, Inachanami, like, those are also really severe. You're violating most of the Torah. But he might also say, no, like, my thing is a subcategory of Avodah Zarah. But violating all of the averus in the Torah, except Avodah Zarah and except Shabbos, wouldn't be enough to consider you a mumar l'chol Torah Kula. And you would just look at one avera, a million, like 611 averos, but nothing that it means more to the whole. Shabbos could be that too. You know, now thinking about Shabbos could also be the linchpin idea, which is why only mumar l'chol Shabbos, only mumar l'Avodah Zarah, would be Mumar L'chol Torah Kula, but nothing else. You know, the Orach Chaim thinks without Shabbos, the world wouldn't exist. Rashi's Lashon of like being Kofar B'Maisa Bereishis makes it maybe sound like a linchpin idea. It really could be. It could totally be. And for the Rambam, you know, maybe Tafka B'Far Hesya could be like a different kind of a Chafza. You'd have to explain Far Hesya, but maybe the Chilul B'Far Hesya is just a totally different thing than Chilul B'Tzina. You know, we've seen the Torah, and very often it's a B'Far Hesya problem of Shabbos. So Shabbos could also be the linchpin idea, but anything else, even all of the Torah except these two, you know, maybe are just not enough, and it really is a threshold question. So I think if it's the Chumrah, you couldn't really extend to the other areas of Torah, but maybe we have an open question of if violating most of the Torah or all of the Torah except these two, does that undermine and undercut the framework the same way we're suggesting is true of Avodah Zarah, and may also kol ha-kofer v'Avodah Zarah k'mon b'chol Torah Kula, and maybe is also true about Shabbos. It's an open question. I think you could go either way. But it's not pashut that just violating all of them except two or rove for the Rashba would be the equivalent of Mumar L'Avodah Zarah and Mumar L'Chol Shabbos b'Far Hesya. Mila is also another interesting thing to consider. You know, do mitzvahs in general have Mumar L'Avodah Zarah status, Mumar L'Chol Torah Kula status? Excuse me. Do we ever think that to the mitzvahs say, you know, there's a really no such thing of a mumar? So the Pisrei Tshuva and the Prima Gadin spoke about this and. Thought that maybe Mila was a raya that to mitzvahs asays can be spoken about in the framework of mamar. But Mila is also different because Mila is like special like Korban Pesach. Maybe it's not even really like an asay because of the expectation that we have that you have to be to do Mila, that it's not just passively avoiding, but you're actively not doing it because of how urgent the mitzvah and kord is to Kedushas Yisroel. We call non-Jews Arelim sometimes in Arel, but you never call that to a non-Jew. The Havamina even of Mesu Echiv, that, like, you know, maybe he would, it would be a problem. He's not Lav Yisrael Ma'aliyah, like, just goes to show the how core, even as a totzah, as a chavtza, having bris milah really is. It's part of the geiris, so that would also be interesting to think about, like, not having milah. So our Gemara obviously takes a stance, but the question is why yes, why not? So in terms of this framework idea, we really need to weigh all these mitzvos and averos, each one, and when, you know, and also when it's the mechayev. When the framework idea is the mechayev for a particular thing, like mamlechot or kula. So very, very quickly, Rav Rosenberg was trying to talk about this linchpin idea in other contexts. In Shas Hashmad is another area where we'll say Yehari V'al Yavor. But it's different. There's Gimel Averos you give up your life for, not for Bishmal, but there's Farhesya you give up your life for, Afilu. There's Farhesya you give up your life for, also Shas Hashmad, Afilu, Agrisa de Misana, even if it's like tying your shoelace, or tying your shoes a different way. There's no Makar for Shas Hashmad, even though there is for the other two. And the question is how we explain Shas Hashmad. So one way to understand is that it's just another category of Chilul, and Betzina. The other option is that it's a subcategory of Avodah Zarah, which is something that Nitziv on the Sheilto says. Another option is that it kind of like tests your loyalty, because they're making it a matter of principle. It's like an independent idea, which is why it doesn't need a makar. It's like they're testing, you know, they make it a matter of principle, so, you know, it becomes that for you as well. In which case, you'd have to give up your life for it. But the other idea is that in Shas Hashmad, you know, the way we look at it is not that like, you have to give up your life because they're going to slowly but surely, they're going to take away this mitzvah, and if you give in, they're going to keep taking it away, and there'll be nothing left. The idea is that in the time of Shas Hashmad, where everything's at risk, they're attacking Torah as a broader system. And once they're doing that, they're attacking the entire framework of Torah. So that's, you know, not violating any of the Averos, B'Shas Hashmad, or violating them, undercuts the entire framework of your commitment to Torah, when that's really what's being challenged and attacked. So that's one of the ways of the framework. We spoke at the Ramban already. Kichol v'chi shisku lavor, you know, it's called shalosas, it's called mitzvos. Megadev was another one. I'm not going to go into it too much, but Megadev could have been in Hilchos Shvuos, but the Rambam puts Megadev in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, you know, being blaspheming Hashem, even though you haven't necessarily committed to another Avodah Zarah, and he explains why it's in Avodah Zarah, and he basically says this idea. That it really is a din in challenging, that broader Avodah Zarah idea of challenging the very basis. Mesis, who's chayiv for just enticing, not even for making someone else do Avodah Zarah, so he's arba, shetzrich, and hachraza. The Nachash HaKadmoni is called a mesis, but as many mefarshim, we say, divrei ha-talmud mishomin, and it's like a rivalry with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But many wonder like how the Nachash is a Mesis. He only told him to eat from the Eitz Hadas, Tovara. He didn't tell him to do Avodah Zarah. So some say maybe it's like a rivalry with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but more than that, they had nothing else to test. There was nothing else to test Adam and Chava's commitment at the time to Avodah Hashem. So we call him a Mesis. They had no other Dinei Torah. So we call him a Mesis because he's challenging their basis, their relationship to God, given that at the time, Me'etzadas Tovara was the only thing. It's a kind of Avodah Zarah in that sense, even though technically it's not. And the Mesis we treat in such a serious way. You know, there's no benefit of the doubt. He forfeits it. There's no Ve'hathareich HaKamocha. You have an Isser to be Chomeid, to desire, you know, him, things from him, or to covet him. There's no regular mercy. Also, the Egel Hazav, you know, is very often described as an Avodah Zarah. But the Ramban points out it doesn't seem like it was an Avodah Zarah, but really, just that they, so there was no kavana Avodah Zarah, but that it was a mechanism to substitute for Moshe Rabbeinu, not that it was an intrinsic God, but as a substitute, to substitute for Moshe Rabbeinu in order to interact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But we talk about it like Avodah Zarah, because even though it didn't qualify as a Maisa Avera, but in terms of what was expected of them and how can it was able to adulterate the entire trajectory of Klal Yisrael and the system of Torah, what they needed to then, you know, reinforce and go back to. So there, it really did kind of function like in Avodah Zarah. So I think the point is in general that in different places, Avodah Zarah, you know, Shabbos, Kol Torah, Kula lines within. You know, what about Shvichas Damim also, Gilui Arayos, we mentioned Mila. So the question is, like, what exactly is going on in all of these? What is the problem? And how, are they always, you know, problematic? Or do we have to be mechalek between different, you know, different areas of halacha? you know, within the different mitzvahs. So that really does conclude that first part. I imagine other people have class, because the next part is just in terms of how many times you need to violate, which also goes to the question of what the issue is in Avodah Zarah, what the issue is in Shabbos and in Kol Torah Kula, becoming a Mumer L'Kol Torah Kula. So I want to talk about that too. That's the last thing. It shouldn't take more than, you know, 5-10 minutes, but that was, because the other thing took me a little bit longer than I expected. But if people have class, so then we could, people have class? Akiva, do you have class? Okay. So maybe if people want to stay, you know, what?
I don't have class.
Okay, so Yoni will stay at least. Okay, so I'll start. If you want to zoom out, you can. Akiva, shkoyach.
I'm
going to
zoom out. Thank you,
great.
Very much. You will.
So the last thing is really, in Shchita, how do we look at, So part of the thinking about the nature of Avodah Zarah in L'chol HaTorah Kula, and the role it plays, I think, is also how much does it take to become a Mumer L'Avodah Zarah, a Mumer L'chol HaTorah Kula. So in terms of thinking about the Mechayiv, I think... So in thinking about the Mechayiv, you know, if the Mechayiv is the Maisa Aveira, so then you might think one time is enough to be considered a Mumer L'chol HaTorah Kula. If you think it's about Rishus or Begida or the framework, I think it's a little bit of an open question. How many times it takes to become a Mumer, L'chol HaTorah Kula, Mumer L'Avodah Zarah, Mumer L'chol HaTorah Kula, and equally in Shabbos. So how many times? So the Shach in Yoredeya Beis Yud Zayin quotes the Maharshal, both for Mumer L'Hachis, interesting enough, Mumer L'Oso Davar L'Hachis, and also Mumer L'Avodah Zarah. He thinks both of them is one time. It takes one time. The Gemara really, where this comes up already in the Rishonim is the Mishnah in Chulin Yudal Arminaf. The Mishnah says, and how many times you need to get the status. The Mishnah says Ashochei b'Shabbes Afal Pi Shechayev B'Nasho Kasher. You know, the Shechita is Kasher, even though he did this Maisa on Shabbos. So the question is, why is the Basar Kasher? So for some, you know, Tosvos who says Bitzina, that really what we're talking about is the case of Bitzina. But had it been b'farhesia, the meat wouldn't be kasher, or the Rashba who says this is b'shogeg, but had it been b'mezid, there would be, the basar wouldn't be kasher. The Rambam also, who says the Mishnayos are talking about either b'shogeg or b'tzina, both, also implies that after one time, all these Tosfos, Rashba, the Peshah, Mishnayos, all imply that after one time it works. So the question is, would the same also be for Avodah Zarah? Would you think the same? That's all in Shabbos. The Maharshal was speaking about Mumer L'Avodah Zarah one time. The Rashba, the Tosfos, the Perush Mishnayos think in Shabbos one time is enough. Would they think the same thing about Avodah Zarah? So again, you might be Mechalik. One time is good for Shabbos, maybe not Avodah Zarah. Others think that only after the first time do you become a Mumer L'Kol HaTorah Kula. Mumer L'Shabbos, Mumer L'Kol HaTorah Kula. Or maybe you need to, it's a little bit different, not after the first time, but you need to do the Aveira a second time in order to become a Mumer L'Chol HaTorah Kula. Maybe even three. The Tosfos, Rabbeinu Elchanan, Avodah Zarah says three. It actually says you need three times. So the question is, again, similarly, if you need more than after the first time, or two times, or maybe even three, so what would the same be to be true of Avodah Zarah? Again, you also may be Mechalik, because the nature of the Mechayev that makes Mumer L'Shabbos or Mumer L'Avodah Zarah, a Mumer L'Chol HaTorah Kula might be different. And the question is, what makes it get over the Rubicon? Is it the Maisa Aveira in one, in the other? Is it the Chumrah, the Begida, the Rishus that it creates, it makes in the Gavra? Is it a framework question? So I think the difference really between after the first, becoming a Mumar after the first, or only after the second, could also be a Ba'in Ka'achas question. As Rav Rozak was discussing, it doesn't only need to be a Chumrah question, or a nature of the Mechayev to become Mumer L'Chol HaTorah Kula, but it could also be about Ba'in Ka'achas. If you're already a Mumar on the first one, so basically what we're assuming is that it has nothing to do per se with status. It's not about being the status, it's about maybe the Maisa Aveira, but also there's no Ba'in Ka'achas problem. we have no issue with him becoming a mumar, even in this very particular Maisa Avera, which is what makes him the mumar. So I think here, again, when we're just thinking about it, you really could be mechalek in general between Avodah Zarah and Shabbos, as we already alluded to. And that could be for one of two reasons. It could be a question of what makes you a mumar lechot or a kula for each one of these, or the nature of the iser and the ba'an ka'achas. So the ba'an ka'achas question, really, what I meant is we have it in Gittin, Vagita v'yada ba'an ka'echad, that a woman is really subject to her husband and an eved to her husband. And the question is, and we say that her hand is her husband's and his hand is like his master's. So how can they receive their shtar shichur if the hand in which they acquire it doesn't belong to them? So, so that's one. And the question is how the ba'an ka'achas works. So the Ketzos actually suggests that it's really because the nature of Gittin is that you don't need a kinyan, you don't need to be kona it, but the fact that it was just in her Rishus B'Alma would be enough, would be sufficient to trigger the kinyan, to trigger her receiving her status. And then only later, and that would make her herself, and then she would be kone, in her hand, which is now hers, to complete, the entire transaction. But again, it's always about assessing like these different things of what what is needed in Gittin and what is required on a level of kinyan, what is required. You also have yeish v'shinei rishus. A person can only get something that he finds. A stolen object, if there's Yayesh and Shina Rishus. But what's interesting is, the Shina Rishus only happens because it's his, because we let it become his. But if it doesn't become his until the Shina Rishus, so it's kind of like this catch 22. And the Ritva says over there, it's a Ba'an Ka'echad's thing. You also have, if Edim sign on a Shtar B'Ribis, so they become Edim Psulin, but they only become Edim Psulin because they signed the Nishtar Shish B'Ribis and validated the Shtar Shish B'Ribis. So you really just have to assess, which one comes first in terms of these questions. In Shechita, though, again, just really to wrap up, mostly, in Shechita, though, how do we look at Shechita, and how do we look at Chilul Shabbos and Avodah Zarah? How do we look at the Maisa of Shechita, and also the Chilul Shabbos and Avodah Zarah? The Ramban thought, maybe that Shabbos was very front-loaded, and that the Avera happened from the very beginning, and Avodah Zarah only happens Bigmar. So he thought maybe Shabbos happens already in the first time, but in the other ones, it would have to be after the first. Because it really is, one time really is enough. Which is why after the first, you're already a mumar lechot Torah kula. It was just an internal problem that you didn't become the status until it was over. And it was a ba'an ka'achas problem. So he suggests that maybe Shabbos, you can have it right away. There's no ba'an ka'achas problem. But in Avodah Zarah, there might be. And he actually thought that in Tosfos, over here in Chulin. But what's interesting, as Rabbi pointed out, is that Tosfos here in Chulin make it sound like it's not after the first, but you really do need two times. It's not a Ba'an Ka'achas problem, but you need two times. Maybe Tosfos in Sanhedrin sound that way, but Tosfos over here in Chulin don't sound that way. They sound like it's the second, but not after the first, which is very interesting. So it really becomes like what the status is based on, and does it come prior to the shame Shechita and Nevela. That's really what we have to consider. If not, if it doesn't come before, so then you're kosher and you're totally good. And maybe after the first, you would be a mumar, but not before. If yes, if the status does become before the Shechita, so then how do we look at that? So do we look at the Avera, or the shame, I would say, Al Tchilasa or Al Sofo? The Ran, not really liking the Ramban so much, thinks that Shabbos is Mekalkel each and every time. So you're not chayiv b'Shabbos at the beginning, the same way you're not chayiv b'Avodah Zarah at the beginning, but only at the end. But the question is, how do we really look at Shechita? The Ran says mekalkel, but there really are at least maybe two other ways to look at it. Rav Akiva Eiger thought that each one is mekalkel to explain the Ramban, at least in this Havamina. The Rav Akiva Eiger thought it's mekalkel amanas tatakein, which would be a violation of Shabbos each and every time. But maybe if you stopped in the middle, you still would have done mekalkel amanas tatakein. The way Rosenberg thought that was that you shouldn't look at the whole Maisa Shechita as a bunch of Mekalkim, Mekalkim, Mekalkos, or Mekalkim, Menasa Takins, Mekalkim, Menasa Takins, but it's a process whose goal is already set out from at the beginning, and whose goal is Tikkun, And so even the kilkels, incremental kilkels leading up to it, maybe narrowly you look at it as a kilkel, but really are tikkuns. Ein hachaname, if you stopped in the middle, it would be kilkel, and you wouldn't be violated, but at least while you're in the process, heading towards the end, it really is a tikkun. It's a shchita kitikuna. And that's the problem. And really, besides that Baron Ka'acha's question, you know, whether maybe after the first, you'd be able, so either is it the first time, is enough? And even if the first time is enough, maybe the Baron Ka'acha's problem would make it have to be after the first. Maybe you require two times, or three times, you know, it's Mechalo Shabbasos, Bifar Hesya, in case of Shabbos, as the Shita Mekubetzes in Chulin points out. Maybe you need more than two, I said three, Tosos Rav Elchanan. And the question maybe also is besides, you know, in terms of why you would require one, two, or three, as I said many times, it maybe have to do with the Mechayev of Mumr L'chol Torah Kula, of Avodah Zarah and Shabbos. What about that makes you a Mumr L'chol Torah Kula? And we mentioned if one time's enough, so maybe it's the Maisa Avera alone. And you have to think about the relationship between Avodah Zarah and Shabbos if you wanted to compare them. So some actually say the Ramah and the Mordechai that the Farhesya is on not only the Shabbos but Avodah Zarah. Maybe the whole idea is that neither of them on a Chumras Avera level, because Farhesya won't affect the Chumras Iser. It'll make you more of a Gavra, Bogade, a Morade. It may make there a greater sense of Chilul Hashem, but it's not going to per se really affect the it being a Chumr Iser, most likely. And if you require Bifarhesya in Shabbos and also in Avodah Zarah, so maybe the idea is that in both of them, we really treat them the same way. But for most, that it's not, Farhesya doesn't apply to Avodah Zarah, and Avodah Zarah is even Mitzina. So maybe Gufa, the idea is that in Shabbos, you need multiple violations, the same reason you need Farhesya, because on its own, it isn't per se a such a Chamer Isser, isn't a Maisa Avera. And for that reason, you know, you need multiple violations to really make it, you know, a Gavra, Bogade, a Morade, you know, someone who really is, you know, defined in terms of his rishos because of his chilul Shabbos before Hesya. But the Avera itself may not be, you know, really the problem. But in Avodah Zarah, where you don't need the Farhesya, maybe Gufa is the Chumras HaIsser, the Maisa Avera. And for the same reason you don't need Farhesya, maybe one time of Avodah Zarah would be enough. But whereas for Shabbos, you may need more than one. That's something that Rav Rosenzweig suggested, you know, for maybe being Mechalik. And it's just interesting to think about this, you know, in terms of other things like the Ksos and Simon and Aleph, and with this we'll end, this is really the last point for now. There are a lot of things I said I left out, but I think this is really most of it. The Ksos equates the Psul Edus question to Mumar, the Mumar question. What do I mean by that? How many times do you have to violate an Avera to be Psul Edus? And he assumes that whatever is true of Mumar, one time, two times, three times, will be true of being Psul Edus. And the Nesivos really doesn't like it. And it really could be for one of two reasons. You know, number one, I think most simply, because Mumar might be about Gavra, about being having a maimid, like having a status. But Psulei Edus may really be about a chashad, may be about a violation of a particular, you know, single, isolated Maisa Aveira, which is kind of that Rambam in Perek Dal and Hilchos Shechita, who separated Chashud and Psul L'Shechita as only needing to be done once, not needing Bedika Sakin, maybe. It's just a different kind of problem. It's a more isolated, independent thing rather than it actually have being a Gavra, which has like the Kulas and Chumras. You might be Pasul Eidus, but you know, you won't need Bedika Sakin, which is why Eidus might be different. And maybe even if you need a lot of times in Mumar, maybe you only need less in Eidus. And it also may be because in Eidus, what we're looking for is not the Shem Umar, but Shem Rasha. You know, Shechayev, you know, being in us, a Lav Sheyesh Bo Malkus, and being a Din Rasha, which is a different category than Mumar, of rebellion and etc. But the nature of Eidus and the requirements of Eidus, what we need as a Shem Eid, just may be different, probably is different than in terms of the Mumar question. So what I really do think we've seen here, you know, at large, is just thinking about the different, it was a lot of shiurim and a lot of details. So while I apologize for it being long, and Yoni, thanks for bearing with me, and Yitz, Shkoyach, I also thank all the other people that were in here. They had class, so I really don't blame them. That doesn't take away from my appreciation to being able to have at least a chabura. But it's a lot of information with a lot of details. I thought, you know, this is really the way we could think about all these different issues. And I think it just teaches us a lot about, as I said, the interrelation between Tariq Mitzvos, with some being maybe higher atop the ladder, or maybe more core and beneath what underlies everything than others, and thinking about how they may affect different areas of halacha, assuming it's not just as simple as becoming a goy l'chol hadvarim, renouncing your Kedushas Yisrael and not being shayach at all. And even then, as I was saying, you know, sometimes goyim are able to do things. So I think you just always have to think about you know, the impact of an avera, of a mitzvah. You have to think about you know, what we're looking for, you know, that what we're looking for in every situation, in Mumar, in Yehari Val Yavor, etc. And you also have to look at the, you know, So with that, I think, you know, it's really a lot here, and it's a much, obviously, it's such an important topic, and it was great that we got a window into it from the Mumar L'Avodah Zarah stuff. So, Shkoyach Hatzlacha Nebechina. And while you guys are here, so I mentioned the Igeres Hashmad, about the Rambam. The Rambam says Avodas Yishma Elim is not Avodah Zarah. And it's really an unbelievable Igeres, if you get a chance to look at it. A wonderful Igeres. And, you know, criticizing this rabbi who tells this poor guy who was forced to bow down, you know, during the Almohad, you know, crusade. I think it was the 11th century, whatever, in Spain. This poor guy, like, felt so bad. He was told he shouldn't even daven. It's like a bizayon to be davening because he worshipped, you know, Avodas Yishma'elim. Shram gives the whole piece and talks about it at the very end. You know, understanding that this rabbi had good intentions. He was just a toa. He didn't understand the halacha, obviously, well enough. At the very end, he says something which is just very, very relevant to our time. It's such a bad thing that, you know, unfortunately, we're under subjugation and forced to give in to the Muslims. And he just says at the very end, he says, you know, he gives a yihi ratzon. He says that the Gemara says, you know, shamta avida debatla. The way these things go, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us these challenges. So the nature of them, built into them already from the very beginning, is that they're avida debatla. They're subject. At some point, they are bound to. It's inevitable. As bad as they seem, that they're always avida debatla. So it's just a bracha always to these times. We should always think about it. You know, shamta avida debatla. This excommunication shouldn't last for so long. It has to upon him. And it won't, because we have a haftacha, as we always do. Even when things seem the worst, and like there's nothing gonna, you know, bin hapachu, it turns around in a second. So, Shkoyach, thanks for learning with me. I hope it was as clear as possible. If you guys have any questions, or if you just want to run off, I understand that too. If you probably have things you want to do today. But I think we got most of it in. I hope so. I hope by trying to be quicker, even though it took a while, I didn't compromise on some of the clarity, but maybe a little bit. Okay. Cultivate, everybody.